12 weeks for £12. Subscribe to The Spectator for this excellent deal and get a £20 Amazon voucher at www.spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and former chief exec of UCAS, Mary Kernock-Cook. So today is results day in England, Northern Ireland and Wales, and much as expected, it's been pretty much carnage. Over a third of grades across the countries have been downgraded, with some schools and colleges seeing more than half of their students affected. Mary, can you crunch the numbers for us today? What have we learnt in terms of the downgrading?
Well, so we've heard that a large proportion of grades have been downgraded, mostly by only one grade. What's interesting is that at a system level, the A-level results are actually up compared to the previous year, and they look quite healthy. And also that's translated through to quite a healthy looking recruitment cycle into universities. So I think what we're finding out today is not that the system has failed, but obviously a lot of individuals feel that they've had very unfair results, and there's a lot of anger about it.
Fraser, there are a lot of horror stories out around on social media, in the papers, and you've spoken to a few kids from the Social Mobility Foundation that you sit on a board for.
Yes, that's right. And I've only spoken to two of the teenagers helped with the Social Mobility Foundation. Both of them have got some pretty shocking stories. The first one I spoke to was a brilliant student. She'd been predicted 4 A stars. She'd been given an offer from Oxford to study medicine. They only wanted 1 A star and 2 A's. And I remember her telling me when she got the offer how delighted she was, because she thought that would be a doddle. She was on course to get 4 A stars. The computer has come back today and told her she's got 4 B's instead. Now, that obviously means that Oxford has withdrawn its offer. She doesn't know what she's going to do. Interestingly, she didn't sit mocks. The government assumes that everybody in England sits mocks. She didn't. The virus got in the way of her mocks. I've also spoken to somebody else helped by the Social Mobility Foundation. She was predicted 4 A's, and she found out today that she's been allocated AABB. So her offer to study medicine at UCL has been dropped. Her back-off offer at Cardiff has been dropped. She had mocks, but she didn't do particularly well in them because she didn't really focus on them. They happened in January at the same time as her med school interviews. So she was going all out to prepare for these pretty difficult med school interviews. Didn't worry about too much of mocks and thought, well, the mocks will just expose what weaknesses I've got so I can focus on that in A-levels. The mocks have ended up dictating what she's got. Now, statistically, they're in the minority, but that doesn't really help them. You could say that, 4 A stars downgraded to AABB, is that such a big downgrade? Well, if it's the difference between the university you wanted and having no backup, that is a pretty big difference. I'm not going to say both of those kids are typical, but what I will say is that they're both from schools that tend not to send people with straight A's to university. That's why they're being helped by the Social Mobility Foundation. They typically have to qualify for free school meals to get on that scheme. So in their case, when you come from a school that simply does not send people to Oxford, that's when the computer's going to say, hang on a minute, I don't believe your predicted grades, because I don't believe a school like this can come up with a kid like this, and they haven't had the chance to sit an exam to make their case. It's heartbreaking, but it was also inevitable. As soon as the government scrapped exams, you were always going to get a system where pupils were going to be left to the unfairnesses we're seeing unravel before us now.
Mary, that inequality point is something that Scotland found out last week as well, that this impacts poorer students worse. And today it seems like we've seen that in England as well, with the proportion of private school students receiving A's and A stars twice as high as the proportion of those at comprehensive schools. So do you think that that's the real problem here, that it is this inequality, that proportionally you're more likely to have your grades downgraded if you're from a disadvantaged background?
So there's a huge technical document that's been published by Ofqual. It's about 350 pages long, and I haven't had time to read it yet, but I'm sure it covers this in a lot of depth, because, you know, I would be literally astonished if the government hadn't done an equality impact review on this massive, rapid system change that had to be brought in this year. So the idea that nobody knew that this might happen, I think I just find incredible, actually. I think you'll probably find buried in the technical documents that there are all sorts of good reasons why schools that typically have more disadvantaged pupils, which we know tend to attain lower grades than pupils from advantaged schools. And, you know, the system wasn't there to kind of change that. You know, we're supposed to change that by having better schools. So what the sort of cases that Fraser's outlining are the outliers, and the outliers and the mavericks were always going to be the ones who, you know, no algorithm could ever have picked those up and guessed that those particular students were going to do better than others. And the really important thing is that these kind of students must appeal. And if they haven't done mocks, that shouldn't matter. There should be other evidence that the school can produce to show that they should have got better grades, if indeed that is the case.
It's actually funny, Mary. I was just speaking to one of them there and saying, look, surely you can appeal now. And she was saying, well, yes, I could. But last time I checked, there'd been something like 250,000 downgrades. So the number of appeals going on will just be huge. So people in their situation will be depending on somebody having the time to go through and to think, yes, this is the exception. And right now, I can think of... And the Social Mobility Foundation itself will be trying to appeal to the universities. Hopefully we'll be giving both of these students space in the Spectator to make their case, to raise it. But I can see how they fear being lost in the system. I can also see how they think, look, I'm from a Yorkshire comprehensive. I can't appeal myself. The school has to do it for me. And are they really going to be believed? So I imagine in the madness, anybody who has been denied a place on grades will be appealing. Why wouldn't you? I certainly would.
Yeah, so I think, you know, again, it would be completely astonishing if the government and the exam boards and Ofqual hadn't expected that there would be a large number of appeals. And I really hope that they have got a slick process in place. I know that UCAS has extended the deadline where universities should hold a place open for someone who hasn't met their grades until the 7th of September, which is, I think, a week later than usual. So people must appeal. If the whole system collapses because there's 250,000 appeals out there, you know, then that's something else for the government to deal with. But the idea that they would put this system in place and not have thought through that there would be a lot of appeals is again, you know, I'm just quite sure they must have planned for this.
And Mary, when it comes to the role of universities, can you talk a little bit about what they've said today? Are they holding, how many of them are holding open places? And is there talk of a cap on university places this year as well?
So, I think universities on the whole are keen to recruit qualified students. You know, that's where they get their tuition fee income is, you know, when they've recruited a student. And most universities are recruiting very actively. A few are just, you know, very selective right at the top, Oxford, Cambridge, Imperial, etc. And I also think that universities have been very up for trying to mitigate some of the unfairnesses in the artificially awarded exam results. And don't forget, universities have actually got very good information on their applicants to decide who to admit and who not to admit, because they've got their previous GCSE results, they've got all the equality information, they've got a personal statement, and critically, they've also got the predicted grades, which were predicted for the most part before the virus crisis. So they're kind of untainted, if you like, by the virus. And they will, you know, they're very good at this. That's how they make offers. They figure out, you know, of all the people who've applied to them with whatever predicted grades, they're very good at figuring out how many of them are likely to make those predictions and how many are not. And that's why they can afford to make lots more offers than places to accept. So, you know, my view is that universities are pretty well equipped to make decisions about who to admit without having the artificial grades as well. Now, you also mentioned the cap. So the cap on university recruitment in England was removed completely in 2015 and, you know, the market prevailed. Universities who students preferred could grow, and the ones who didn't perform well and students didn't like, you know, wouldn't do so well. Right at the beginning of this crisis, I think everyone thought that not only international students wouldn't turn up for university this year, but also that domestic students would would change their minds and want to hold back. You know, you can remember those few months back when, right at the beginning of the crisis, you know, you just weren't sure what was going to happen. And so the universities actually asked the government to put in place a cap. It was quite a soft cap. It was forecast growth plus 5%. And that was designed not with students in mind, but it was designed to make sure that universities at the top of the pile didn't hoover up all the places from those lower down the pecking order to make up for lost international students, and therefore universities lower down the pecking order might get into financial trouble. So it was a kind of a market smoothing exercise that universities asked for. Of course, what's happened since then is that quite the opposite. Instead of demand being weak, demand has actually been strengthening over that period as people have realised that going to university is actually a good option when you can't go off and have a year travelling. There probably won't be jobs for people to do if they defer for a year. And so actually demand seems to have been growing during that period. And we can see that in the data today, because the number of students placed is up, the numbers who are withdrawing from the system is down, the number of deferrals is down, and the number of people who've applied since the January deadlines has grown by something like 20%. You know, so lots of people have suddenly thought, gosh, I think going to university might be a good option for me. So now we've suddenly got a cap, which is potentially acting as a kind of sea anchor on student ambition. And that, of course, would be a terrible shame if the cap was the thing that made all of this go really pear-shaped. You know, I think a student could perhaps tolerate having been downgraded a grade or two if they're still able to go to the university that they want to go to.
I think from what Mary says, the cap sounds really quite politically outrageous. I mean, first of all, is it such a problem if there are more places at good universities? I can't work out why the government, it even claimed to be acting in the interests of students, if it's actually stopping people going from better universities, so they'd be forced to go to lesser ones. And also, if there is, you could say that removing the cap would make more people at university, perhaps that's more expensive for the government. I think, Mary can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's about £10,000 is roughly what they think the government will cost somebody to send them to.
Yeah, I think, but that's just the average cost per year to cover the unrepaid student loans is about £10,000 a year. It doesn't say anything about other receipts to the economy and the tax revenues and so on. And £10,000 a year must be a lot cheaper than having somebody on benefits. I don't know if it is, but I'm sure it's a good bit cheaper.
Well, that could be the alternative right now. And I think that throughout lockdown, young people have been at the bottom of the government's considerations. From the very start, where schools were closed down first, when exams were cancelled rather than being held under social distancing, as they completely could have been, avoiding all of this nonsense, to Gavin Williamson's last-minute announcements, which showed just this week, which showed how little he'd been considering it, young people have been considered last. I think it's time for that to change, for the cap to be removed, and for the government to start what should be a fairly long apology process to the people who have been needlessly treated in this way and treated basically as casualties of the crossfire of lockdown.
Fraser, today Boris Johnson has come out in support of Gavin Williamson, saying that he backs him on this, but it was a week after the Scottish results came out that the Scottish government had to do a pretty dramatic U-turn. Do you think the UK government will do that for the rest of the countries?
I don't, actually. I think that England's problems are slightly different. And there are, you know, the number of downgrades there are in England aren't as many as there were in Scotland. It's only going to be these mavericks that I was talking about earlier, these people who, by accident of birth, were caught in schools that don't tend to send people to top-flight universities. It's funny, the first one I was talking about, Sutiyam, she came here from Iran when at the age of 10. She wrote something for The Spectator, age 16, completely brilliant. And when she was given her Oxford offer, I thought to myself, this is a great example of the British dream, how you can come here knowing nobody with nothing, and then get given this fantastic chance to study medicine at Oxford. And now it seems that her British dream has turned into a COVID nightmare. There must be ways of making that good, and I hope the government finds them.
Fraser, what needs to happen now is there needs to be a very rapid publication of exactly how to make appeals, in what circumstances, and what the process is. And the government needs to get an army of people in place to get these appeals done really quickly and undo the unfairnesses as quickly as possible so that people aren't disadvantaged. And, you know, I know there's this resit opportunity in the autumn, which isn't a very good option for most people, because it means delaying whatever you were hoping to do for a whole year in most cases. So for me, getting an appeals process done, you know, that can scale quickly, get people sorted out with the right grades, is the absolute urgent priority. I don't think it's necessary, you know, to suddenly say, oh, well, teacher predictions, because we know that teachers are going to predict optimistically, and you know, not everyone will deserve the grades that that they've been predicted. So that I think the appeals process is what needs to happen, so that unfairnesses can be spotted and undone.
So I guess we'll watch this space in the coming few weeks then. Fraser and Mary, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes, and don't forget to leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.